All right, so welcome to this Extinctionati podcast episode 148, and we're going to talk about the climate narrative. So we have some new people on the Extinctionati show today. It's Pradeep from India and Kim from Kansas. So maybe you two could say hi and introduce yourselves to the audience. Kim, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I'm Kim. I've been talking about global warming and reading about it and studying it on my own for many, many years. And it just gets more ridiculous every year. So I think a lot of people need to spend more time researching it instead of just listening to what the talking heads are saying all the time, because they're not telling us the truth.
For real.
So, Pradeep, you can go next.
Yeah. So, I'm Pradeep. I stay in Bharat, that's India, in Bhubaneswar. I used to stay in Bengaluru, and by conscious decision, I have decided to stay out the rest remaining years till we collapse in my home state. This is a state I was born in, and it's a very spiritual state, and I'm totally. And so privileged to be here now, and incidentally, it's supposed to be a very backward state, but in terms of spirituality, it's right peak spirituality. And so people here have forecast the end of the world 600 years back. And generally, I spend most of my time trying to go through these YouTube videos put up by the Malika Babas. You know, they are sadhus, you know, who have studied these books 600 years back written by saints. And basically, as for myself, like, I have been in research all my life, financial research and retail banking and other things. Then, but my main interest is my own research on society, etc. and all. So in this process, I started a blog back in 2010, and most of it were also ideas on which I used to write during my 20s and even during 2000. So basically, I have written a blog called newgrammaroflife.blogspot.com. It's about everywhere from 2010, these blogs are there, and it's all about how societies are successively getting worse, they are crumbling, and then economies too are getting in deeper into debt and all, just collapsing. And finally, the biggest great change is climate, which will, reaches its kind of peak year, like it will simply destroy the entire planet. That's it. So I've been working on all these parameters very actively on social media and other ways. Apart from this, I'm also a very strong, I believe in Bharat, because we are a 14,000-year-old continuous civilization, and we have all the books and proofs and all the history behind it. So I'm a very strong guy, and I feel we are the last living indigenous race. All the indigenous races have been killed by Europeans in Americas and Australia, and to a great part, they have taken over Africa by making them Abrahamics. So Bharat is the only country where our civilization goes back 14, 15 years unadulterated. Namaste.
Namaste. So I'm going south. I have a real name as well, but I'm going south on this channel. And I am a writer who is living in the capital of Greenland, in Nuuk. And we had the last bit of snow last night, and we're going into spring little by little now. It's kind of like Easter kind of weather and feel to it. So I have a little prepared intro to the climate narrative topic, and I don't really like reading from a text on a show, but it's kind of too much to remember, right? And it's also important that we try to focus here on the, you know, the government narrative. We can't expect to agree about everything on climate. You know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. The object here is not to come to agreement about what the climate is doing, because climate is doing all kinds of stuff all over the place, right? So we're just trying to find out whether or not the official narrative of climate is false or not, which, you know, shouldn't be too hard. Okay, I'm going to start to read through this here. So this is the climate narrative episode. My kind of ambitious plan for this episode is to look at the climate narrative from two or more different angles, momentarily uniting the bitter enemies of the so-called climate debate for this purpose only. Now, the plan requires a certain amount of discipline and respect between our participants. No one should expect agreement on all points with regard to the climate, obviously, but we can hear each other out and express our particular point of view, thereby embracing the lost art of conversation. Yay, conversation. By focusing on the climate narrative, which large amounts of people agree is faulty, maybe even a hoax, we can learn more about this narrative and the power behind it. So in this light, I shall describe myself as a lifelong observer of the climate narrative and the forms it takes. Where I'm no expert on climate, I may perhaps be considered an expert on the climate narrative, simply by observing it over so much time. So, tipping points. The case of tipping points is very illuminating. The concept is simple enough. The glass at the edge of the table is tipping over. Once it has tipped, it falls to the ground, empties its contents, and smashes to pieces. For many decades, the climate narrative applied the tipping point in its storytelling because it served its purpose at the time. Stir everyone up. This is very concerning. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. We now see the flip side of that argument. They're now trying to walk it back, saying it's much less irreversible. It doesn't matter if we cross them, and there never were any tipping points anyway. The argument served its purpose. It's now past its use-by date, most likely because, according to its own logic, that is the logic of the climate narrative, we're there where the closing window has closed, the glass has tipped, and there's nothing we can do about it. Or as Salon magazine put it, it's no longer motivating people for climate action. So we're seeing the alleged climate science being generated to fit the narrative. Now, does that remind you of something? We'll stay with tipping points for just a tiny bit longer. As the Paris COP meeting in 2015 created the 1.5 and 2C concept, the logic of tipping points was strangely absent. In this case, it wasn't useful to the climate narrative. 2C was what the elites were able to agree on. Don't confuse me with science. So, leaving the science out of it completely, the useless Paris Agreement now says nothing about the tipping point, maybe being closer to 1C or 0.5C. Who knows, right? We're meant to believe it doesn't matter where the actual tipping point beyond which warming is unstoppable is. Instead, the Paris text squawks like a crow or a seagull. 2C, 2C, 2C. It's just a number taken out of thin air. There, I hope I've made it clear that the climate narrative fails its own logic test by referring to the narrative itself and its own concepts. I've tried to not say anything about how it really is or what I believe. I've tried to keep strictly to the climate narrative itself and how its credibility collapses as it meets the real world. Thank you. Someone else take the talking stick, please.
Came up with several things that it's hard to isolate it down into just one idea. But one of the things that bothers me most about the narrative itself is the fact that it starts from a place where lies have already been proven. What I'm talking about is way back in the early part of the 20th century, I mean, late part of the 20th century, they were predicting the world would end in 1998 and then in 2005. Then it was 2020, and it never has. And everything that they throw out there has been proven to be an exaggeration, to be friendly. But none of it is really accurate. And they pick and choose things that they want to talk about. One of the things that I came across when I was planning to be here was the ozone. That was something that became fairly clear. Its own existence is relatively recent. But they don't know how long it has even been there. They just found it. And so they start studying the ozone from that particular place, but they have no idea, none, how long it was there before. They try to measure it, and they went off, and then they said it was fluorocarbons, you know, the spray can stuff, and made everybody quit using it, but it still grows and ebbs and flows. And now the most recent thing about the ozone is they're blaming growth on the Tongan. Do you remember that big volcano that blew up in the South Pacific? Okay, it triggered a tsunami and a sonic boom that tried twice around the world, that went around the world two times. And it affected the ozone 2 years later. And so what I'm getting at here is, can't this also be something that is, they don't know what they're talking about, but they're trying to use it, like you said, to scare everybody. And it's not a thing. Am I being sensible? No. Okay, what do you think?
Absolutely. I think they're kind of, grasping at straws, or what you say in English. You know, it's like just half a year ago they were talking about, they had cleaned up the shipping fuels or something, and there was no longer as much sulfur from shipping, from freight ships. And, you know, they have all these kinds of explanations or attempts, and no one really knows what it is, well, what the reasons are, and we don't even know if it actually did warm up as much as they said last year, right? Because as we discussed, on Facebook, Kim, 2 weeks ago, right before Easter, they only have a certain amount of measuring points for the ocean, for instance, and then they extrapolate, and they have this computer models that say, but if it's this warm in this bay over here, then certainly the whole side of Pacific Ocean is this warm. And they have like maybe 4,000 points or something, and only a few of those points are at the surface level. And still they say that, we know exactly how warm the global ocean surface is all around the planet.
It was just a few years ago, Scottish scientists detected 91 volcanoes under the ice sheets in Antarctica. They didn't know those things were there, and they're active. And now they're finally admitting that the water there's ice under Antarctica that's melting. NASA was the one who said, no, that can't possibly be why the ice sheets are melting. 91 volcanoes, within like 100 miles of a continent, and the chain runs under Antarctica. So Antarctica is melting from below and from the side. The oceans flow through there, and they talk to each other. They mix up, you know that. How can they, like you were saying, extrapolate the entire temperature of 75% of the Earth based on maybe a dozen points of where they get their information, when they're not even considering things like the underwater volcanoes in Tonga and things that are going on all around the world. And they just, they pick a spot and pick a spot, and put them all together and come up with pure nonsense.
Really. Yeah, that was what I was aiming to say, that, you know, it, when they started explaining the heat last year, they said, oh, it was the Tonga, or no, it was the shipping, fuels. So the third option is basically that it didn't warm, it didn't have that huge warming signal. They might theoretically at least have faked or misunderstood those data. So it's like if you're at a stage in civilization where you can no longer trust government or the official narrative, then we don't. First of all, we don't really know what we are trying to explain, because was the effect that we were told happened really happening? You know, that's kind of how deep we have to start. Pradeep, please save us here. You must have some answers.
See, basically, like, as we have seen over the past five, ten years, there were fewer parameters on which we were tracking climate, you know, like one was CO2, heat, I mean, temperature, and very few. If you look back 15 years. And now what is happening, this entire gamut, I think we have about, in climate alone, around 30 to 40 tipping points are there. I mean, various, if you just, you don't get into a strict, whether it's cause or effect, but basically they all become tipping points at the end. And so with safely 30 to 40 of them, and as we have seen last 3 years, especially since COVID, I think all these parameters are just, the rate of increase is, very scary now. It's getting fairly into an almost exponential kind of year. So I think there's nothing, and I'm trying to give a holistic view of this whole thing. You know, the governments, they should have a role. I mean, they should have plans for, they should tell the public.
Oops. Yeah, Pradeep did tell us about the storm that was over his area. So maybe power. We're seeing the effect. No, there
it is. Wasn't clear. Is he saying that the all these changes are inevitable because they're natural, or is he saying that these changes are from human activity?
Yeah, I think what he's saying is that because of the nature of the things he is talking about, they are self-reinforcing. You know, so if they, like a snowball coming down the slope, right? It gets bigger and bigger because it includes more and more snow as it rolls down. And so what one interesting argument that a lot of people share with me is that at this stage today, 2024, nature itself is causing more of the problem than what humans are contributing.
Yeah, know? I believe that.
And the official narrative, the climate narrative, is always about, oh, this is in our control. We are, we are all powerful. We can, if you just vote for our party or whatever, we're going to, like Jill Stein said in American election 8 years ago or something, vote for the Green Party and we will stop climate change. Yeah, right. That's going to happen.
These things are happening all on their own, and I don't think it matters what we do.
No.
Short of a nuclear bomb, that would really mess things up. Mm-hmm. But just by living our lives day to day, I really think Mother Nature has us all battled, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's doing more.
That's very interesting, because that's kind of where I've come to as well, you know, from probably a very totally different path than you have walked in your life, right?
Yeah.
So because I used to be kind of a climate activist when I was a teenager, like, you know, like Greta Thunberg and stuff, right? So I've gone the that way and come to a. I never trusted the climate narrative, you know, because I noticed that the politicians were always lying about. The control,
move the goalposts.
Yeah, they were always lying about the control part of we're going to fix it argument, right? So they said, you know, we're going to do blah 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 blah, and they never do what they promised to do. You know, they break the promises all the time, and then they come back 20 years later and say, now we have 10 years. When they even had said they had 10 years, you know, 10 years was a deadline 20 years earlier, you know, so that's like minus 10 years, not 10 more years, you know. So the only thing we know is that we cannot trust them whatever, right?
Well, especially when a lot of them are really have become quite wealthy off the notions and off their own mm-hmm. ideas. You know, mm-hmm. Al Gore, for one. I mean, everybody knows him. And when they're making, I've always kind of, this is oversimplified, okay, really. But what I've kind of seen, the way I've seen things is that they needed to come up with a way. Uh-oh, are you there?
No, I'm here, yeah.
They needed to come up with a way to make money for the global elite to begin to take over as much of the world as they could, but they needed something common to tax in order to get that money. And the common thing was air. I mean, everybody's got air, right? So you go in there and you figure out a way to tax the very air that they breathe. And that's what they did. And that's really what this is all about. The globe is going to change. It always has, and it always will. And they could say that humans are making it faster. They don't know that. And that's what you were saying. They don't know anything. They just kind of throw it out there and see what sticks, you know?
Oh.
Welcome back.
I'm sorry. Look, I think there's some problem at my end. We had some severe storms today. And
hey, power. Welcome.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Luke.
Should
I carry on what I was trying to say?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
Achha. So basically, like, now the tipping points are much more, and plus the rate of acceleration has gone beyond all day in the last couple of years, I would say. And as it looks, I mean, certainly there'll be food grain shortages in another couple of years, and so on. I mean, and just to give one example. So, I think, like, the climate groups like us, what is our role in this? I mean, like, how can we contribute to making the landing soft? You know, like, there is going to be a hard landing. I mean, because society is not prepared. I'll tell you the very basic thing. I was telling my wife today, like, we had this power issue for about 1 hour. And we have been using this house for about 6 years. We spend here 3-4 months a year. And we've never had it. And so I said, like, from now on, why don't we start practicing living without electricity in our house at least once a week? Just practice. Because I think we need...
Really?
Because we need to practice for...
Oops. We lost him again.
Oops. Okay. Well, he's trying to come back anyway, so it's not like he doesn't like to be here. So that's a good thing, I guess.
It got real cold here in February. And, of course, it was the coldest 2 weeks of the year. And at the beginning, our furnace went out. and they needed 2 weeks to get us the new furnace.
So
we were freezing. I'm telling you, it was cold in here. I have a fireplace, but we had no furnace and very cold for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And like he said, I was practicing living a little bit cooler house. Mm. And that just all by itself was very hard. People have no idea. And I kind of thought of it as a practice run. So
how to stay. Yeah, we had a week or two with no power here in Greenland, you know, in winter. That's a couple of years ago, but you know, you can imagine when you have no, and we thought that the central heating in the building would still work without power. Turned out it didn't work because a tiny part of it needed electricity, right? So absolutely no heating at all in the midst of winter.
It's so cold. It got down to 40 in the house.
We actually had to make coffee, you know, to heat water for coffee on the camping stove because, you know, there was no power on the stove.
You had to go outside.
Yeah, I did it inside because it was snowing outside, you know. But
that's not smart.
No, but what Pradeep was saying, I think... The worst consequence of the climate narrative is that they are telling farmers all over Europe and I think Canada and America to stop doing it, you know, to stop farming vast areas, and that is supposed to solve or to alleviate the situation, and it isn't, you know, it's like. It's like they have this idea that if we only do X, Y, and Z, then everything will be fine and, you know, it will be cool again or whatever.
Well, it's what you're saying.
But the solution... excuse me?
They're arrogant.
Yeah, absolutely. And the solution... Nobody believes the solution. Not people... on that side of the argument or on this side of the argument, you know, it's like the only thing we know is that they are trashing food production, you know, and we have all these mysterious fires at meat packing plants and you know, power substations in America.
Crazy.
So it's kind of craziness, and there's sort of not never any sort answer from the FBI or whatever. They cannot find these people and they blame all kinds of people. You know, if they look like you and me, then obviously they must be guilty because, you know, we are the worst, right? So it's like, and I think it's very important also, if you're trying to understand what is going on with the climate policies and narratives, it's very important to look at the full picture of, are there any wars raging in the world right now? Have the governments lied about, you know, medical stuff in the recent past? Is there any reason at all to trust these people with our money and with our lives? Right.
Or our livelihoods. Or now, I don't know if you guys run into this where you're at, but here in the United States, that they put so much stuff in our food that's not good for you. I know in Europe they banned a lot of things that are allowed in our food. BHAs, I think, are one. I think that's right. It's something you put in to preserve meat, and it makes everything taste like chemicals and salt. And that's in everything, especially if you eat out a lot, because they have to. They're required by law to poison us. You see.
Okay.
Now, I know they don't think they're poisoning us, but it's terrible what they do. And the only way to get, normal food is find your own sources, grow your own garden, and cook everything yourself. I'm lucky I live in the Midwest, where we have people and places we can go to, you know, to get the natural stuff. And we're not just stuck with what they sell in the stores. Okay. Did you hear about the Amish farmers? They were selling beef to each other, and the government came in and made them quit. They weren't hurting anybody.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I heard a story from America about raw milk from the cow.
Yes.
That humans have been drinking for 100,000 years, been drinking in raw milk, and
farmers get in trouble.
For some reason, it has been outlawed or banned or whatever. So you're a criminal if you buy or drink or sell raw milk.
You don't go to jail. What happens is the farmers can't sell their milk to the dairies that process it into things and bottle it and stuff. If they get caught selling to somebody like me outside of their contract, then they get in big trouble for that. So a lot of them won't do it. But more and more you're seeing like a farmer's son will go off in a section of the farm and maybe milk a half a dozen cows, and he's not part of the contract. And so they can sell raw milk that way. We got to get around it.
Yeah.
That's been going on for years. My grandpa was a dairy farmer.
Okay. Yeah. We have, I think I have to go back 1,000 years or something to find the nearest farmer in my family. But or maybe some parts of the family are closer, up in the fjords. It's the food thing, and you have something you call regulatory capture in America, or the phenomenon is all over the world, but it basically means that the very government agency that is supposed to look after your food and milk and whatever, they have themselves been corrupted by the big ag or the big economic actors, corporations,
the Department of Agriculture, all of them. They come in and they do what they think is best for, I don't even know anymore. You were saying a minute ago about how they don't want people to grow crops. They've been doing that a long time too. They'll go to a farmer and say, instead of risking, 100 acres and taking a chance on the weather, we don't want you to plant wheat there this year. We'll pay you $2,000 not to grow anything. And that's called subsidy. And they've been doing that since I was young, which was a long time ago.
No, you're joking. It's 2 or 3 years ago. I'm just going to look at the chat, what is going on in the chat.
Cool.
So, yeah, we have some people here. I'm trying to invite. Why can't it remember the link that I have in the copy memory? That's very strange, I think.
In order to talk to you, I have to be on an iPad. I'm not familiar with how to run it. So don't ask me.
I have to go on the iPad to chat with the stream. So maybe going back a bit to the climate topic again. I've heard that Kansas or maybe Minnesota, I am not so read up on the geography in America, but I've heard that some of the near border Canada states have actually gone colder over the recent decades. Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
They haven't. Okay. They exaggerate everything. They haven't had a storm. I grew up in Northwest Iowa, which is the state directly under Minnesota. Okay. We're not too far from Canada. In 1975, in the 1977, two horrible blizzards that shut us down. Well, we were snowed in our farm for 2 weeks and had to have people with snowmobiles bring us groceries because we couldn't get out. They don't have storms like that anymore, where they have snow drifts that are 20 feet high. And so, but they're trying to, I remember that, I lived it, okay? So, and it was considered some of the worst storms ever. And as far as I know, they haven't broken those records yet.
I just saw in the chat that somebody said that it's the reason, you know, the food stuff in America is the reason American foods are banned in over 3 dozen countries, I think.
Yeah. Maybe you can remember what this stuff was called. It's a very specific preservative that's not allowed because it causes cancer.
Yeah. You know, like all the things they add are sort of carcinogenic, or how you say. And I think I have a theory because, you know, like one of my grandfathers, I'm not very fond of all kinds of vegetables. You know, it's like I'm kind of a vegetable skeptic. actually, it may be one of the reasons I'm relatively healthy. You know, because I don't get all of these preservatives or all of these spray, whatever they spray the vegetables with and stuff. You know, just by not eating a lot of it, you know, and trying to.
Most of, you know, it is in canned foods or frozen, not always frozen. Mm-hmm. The key word is prepared foods, okay?
Yeah.
You get frozen vegetables that are just frozen vegetables. There's no preservatives in those. But if you get frozen vegetables that come in a secret sauce, now you're getting back into the preservatives. That's another long story. So if you want to go back to climate, no, we are not really, that I can tell, breaking any records. And when you, I was telling about Kansas in the 1930s, and how those were the hottest years, year after year. And they'll go back and they'll say, oh, we had record-breaking temperatures today, highest temperatures since 1938. Well, how convenient. 1938 was when that drought ended. So yeah, don't go to 1935, because then you're not a record-breaking temperature anymore. This is what they do.
We had a story, you know, in Hardanger, which is one of the fjord areas in Norway, where I was born. You know, so in the deep inland Hardanger fjord area, there is a tiny little village called Ulvik, and it's one of these, you know, the Viking areas from the old time, right? And this very idyllic, very beautiful apple growing village called Ulvik, they actually beat the 1930s all of Norway record warm temperature from the 1937 or something, right? So it was reported, you know, locally or regionally, that Norway's 1937 record was broken in this little tiny little village by the fjord. But then the guys from Oslo, you know, from the capital city, the Met Office, they sent their guys and they looked at the apple trees and they looked at the thermometer that recorded this fantastic worm record. And they just cancelled it. They just deplatformed it and said, oh, yeah, hey, this has been our official measuring station since 1965, this very exact place. But now, today, we're saying No, you know, because of the shade from the apple trees or whatever, you know, reasons. We're just going to delete this worm record. And that was even though all around the fjord, you know, on the banks of the fjord and side fjords and stuff in this very area, you had like 32 degrees, 34 degrees C. So that, you know, the context, the larger picture on the same afternoon or when this temperature was broken, it was very logical that you had 37 or 38 degrees or whatever it was, right? And just to come there, you know, go on a train from Oslo and or in black SUVs or whatever they travel in, and just go up there and arrest the apple tree and throw away the thermometer and just cancel that measuring station just because it didn't fit their narrative there and then, you know, that they didn't want to acknowledge that, oh, it's gotten this far this year, that maybe they have some kind of schedule that they want to break the record in an election year or whatever, you know, they have their own, you know, agenda.
Sorry, going, right? It's, how are we ever going to figure it out? Just know that it exists and take everything with a grain of salt. You know, that's it.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
In Norway, actually, a lot of people have their own private weather station, you know, their own private, some kind of machine or whatever that measures humidity, temperature,
dew point, and everything. A thermometer.
Yeah.
I have
so it's kind of a. excuse me.
I have one in my garden too.
Cool.
My own thermometer and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that is one way to do it. That you know. Normal people can network their measuring stations, and then you know, you can figure out, oh, has the government been selling us a story on this that is different from what we can observe, you know, observe ourselves?
Okay, where I live in this little small town in Kansas, a lovely line of storms will form to the west. And I love storms, okay? So here comes this great looking storm. It's got thunder and then lightning and heavy rain and wind. And I'm getting so excited. And then about 5 miles west of town, the storm splits and goes around us. So this little town would not be a good place to measure rain, okay? Because that happens so much. Don't ask me why. Somebody isn't living right here. And I don't know. That's what one of my objections to these hit and miss weather stations is, how many places are like where I live, where the weather breaks, it goes around, or other places always get hit over and over and over. You know, it could be flooding 20 miles from here and we're in a drought. That's the Midwest. Okay, maybe it's like that places. They can't do it.
No, it's very diverse. Yeah, I think it's called topography. Is kind of how the landscape is you know, made out. And
we're pretty flat here.
Yeah, it's like you say. You know, even if you. If you like, you know, if you like mountain hiking or walking, whatever, you can sit at home with the map, and you can look at the map and make some kind of idea what it will take, how long it will take, how hard it will be to walk from A to B, you know, on the map. But then you go out there, and it's a totally different story. You know, you got these steep mountains, you have these valleys that. Can kill you or whatever. There's a huge river there that is impossible to cross. You know, is so it's kind of the same thing. You can't just you know, look at, let's say, Greenland and say, oh, it's just a blob of ice, whatever, it's the same temperature all over. No, absolutely not. And every place is super diverse. I mean, even have trees, you know, we have tall trees in some valleys in the south of Greenland, for instance. And so that is kind of, you know, like people who believe that the entire planet is going to go belly up and everybody will die. They have never been in the world. Have you seen the planet? You know, it's totally different from place to place, even in the same mountain area.
Even in the same state.
Yeah.
State. You know, in Kansas, off to the west, it's mountains. In the middle, it's flat, like you've never seen flat. And then you get a little further to the east, and it gets pretty again. That's Kansas. It looks like Utah out in the west. And it looks like New England in the east. How can they then take a thermostat thermometer and put it in a Topeka airport and say, this is the temperature in Kansas?
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't.
So,
totally.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to sign off here. My hour's up.
So, yeah, I think we're pretty done for now. I will try to go come back with another show next Sunday, and I will send you an invite. And I want to thank you very much for coming on. And people make these enemy images of each other, and I didn't find you scary at all. I didn't find your views crazy at all. It's you know, it's kind of skeptical. We have to be skeptical after all the things we've been through, right?
And if people listen, you find out why we're skeptical, you know?
Yeah.
We don't just wake up and decide to be skeptical the rest of our lives. We're not all of us are that.
There's a reason.
There's reasons, yes.
Yeah.
It was great talking to you today.
Okay. Thank you very much. And see you later, Kim. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Nice day. Bye.